Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Acton, and with me is Leo San. Leo, how are you doing?
I am still in disbelief of what we just witnessed right now. It is yet another classic 2024-2025 Wolves finish. I mean, I don't know how many of these we've seen all year. But yeah, it still feels unreal. I think the Wolves are now, by my count, two games a win from going to NBA Finals now, right? I mean, they beat the number one seed OKC Thunder now two times out of four this season. So yeah, feeling pretty good.
Yeah, hard not to be. That was probably one of the craziest games I've ever seen, I think, or at least in a long time. Wolves are down 25 against OKC tonight. They're down 16 points with 3:41 left. They don't even have Anthony Edwards out there due to injury down the stretch of the game, and they come back and win. I guess before we jump into the meat of the show, Leo, what are your big picture thoughts on a performance like that?
I mean, there are so many things about this game that was just wild. I will say I missed a portion of the game that I went back and rewatched tonight before we started recording that. I watched about the first quarter and a half of the game, and then I turned it on in the fourth quarter, pretty much like midway through the fourth quarter. I was like, all right, well, it seems like you can probably fill in the blank of what happened. Wolves aren't shooting well. They can't get a stop. Then they're making all the little plays. And so it's like, yeah, this seems to be on pace. And then when they came back, I mean, it was just one of those, it instills belief. I think not just in this season, but more for the future. Cause you saw the players that were pushing that comeback, the TJ Shannon just aggressively driving. I mean, Jalen Clark playing shutdown defense, they're making all the little plays. Nah, even as well too, hitting some timely shots, even Rob. So I think you kind of continue to get that glimpse into the future. I think that's what's so tantalizing about, like, all right, you know, what do we have here with Ant moving forward? That can this be the real course? I think that was a lasting kind of image in my head from this game. The takeaway message I have from this game was like, wow, this is maybe a group here that we got some.
Yeah, it was a real like youth movement down the stretch of the game. They weren't like I said, Ant was kind of out with injury. We'll see. He did, obviously, he had the crazy block reminiscent of that Indiana game last year at the end of the game. On SGA, so he did kind of come back into the court. Hopefully that's a good sign for his availability next time. But, like, I mean, their closing lineup was just a bunch of young guys, Naz Reid and Jaden McDaniels. Like, to beat OKC, I mean, obviously OKC doesn't have a bunch of vets on their team either, but and Chet is out. But, like, to beat OKC, to be down that much, it's not just an impressive win. It's an incredibly valuable win. Because, like, now, at least maybe after the Laker game on Thursday, like, the schedule, like, really lightens up for them. And so if they're going to go on a run here, like, this will help propel them. And, like, the Clippers lost again tonight. Dallas is hurt. So, like, your chance to get out of the play-in just skyrocketed with the win, like, tonight.
Yeah, it's hard to – I mean, when you think about this game in an isolated – just kind of situation where, like, all right, this is just an amazing game on itself. You kind of zoom out and think about it. This really had bigger playoff implications than we thought in terms of seeding. I mean, obviously the game's behind trying to get out of the play-in, but that's another notch into Wolves' belt against another Western Conference team that very much will factor in when it comes down to the seeding and tiebreaker. So yeah, I mean, it's a huge win. Needed to have it, especially after dropping that Houston Rockets game. And then, you know, you didn't really expect them to win both of the OKC Thunder game, let alone one. And so stealing that one is super important. And yeah, they could steal one in LA, then they're in prime position to really finish outside of the play-in or above the play-in tournament and into the top 60.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that'll lead us into our first howl or foul topic. Was that the best win of the season? I'm going to go howl, and I don't think it's particularly close. And I'm kind of trying to think, like, when was the last regular season win that was as good or as fun as this one? I mean, like, playoffs you kind of got to set aside, but, like, when do you agree with me? And when was the last, like, big regular season win like this?
Oh man, I also will be giving this a, I'm gonna say, howl without an L because there was no L had tonight. It was H-O-W, and let's end with that W. There's no L tonight. So, yeah, I mean, I think you think about given the competition, who we were down in terms of our three starters. Nas was out just for a little bit, a couple minutes after hurting his ankle at the end of that third quarter, and also missed a portion of that fourth quarter as well, too. It's like there was absolutely no reason the Wolves should have come back in this game. And so, that deficit, I mean, they were down 25 points with, 10 minutes and 50 seconds left. The way that we scored the points, the way we defended, and even we even had a little deficit in overtime as well, too. It's not like it went to overtime and just kind of steamrolled them. It was they had to battle back against early three-point deficit in OT where it's like, all right, well, do the Wolves have any juice? And they did. They just kept fighting, punching back. You think about, okay, well, what was the most impressive game, regular season game? I mean, the first one that pops into mind, I mean, you go back about 7 years ago here, just under 7 years ago, like game 82 against the Nuggets, that to break the drought. Obviously, it's not as big as that game, but you're talking about even just in the scope of this season. I mean, the Wolves have had a number of crazy finishes. I mean, early in the season against the Nuggets, I think that was one of the ones that was pretty crazy. I think they had a huge comeback against, I think it was like 16 down with 3 or 4 minutes left. That was a crazy comeback. There was that Rockets game that happened in December as well, too, where they had no reason coming back. Just kept hitting three after three and hit that kind of kill ball three at the end as well, too. So those are the games that immediately pop up to me. But yeah, man, I mean, this one's going to go down as one of the best games in Wolves, I would say, regular season history for sure.
Yeah, I agree. It's like almost it's hard to put into words. Obviously, we're going to try here. But I saw a stat here. NBA teams in the last, this is by Automatic on Twitter. NBA teams in the last 20 seasons were previously 1-9,249 when trailing by 16 points with 3.5 minutes or less. And now that's 2 because the Wolves completed that comeback. And the first one was the longtime Wolves fans remember your Kings on January 27th, 2020 beat up on the Wolves, who were up 17 with 2:44 left, and they came back and won. Your Kings are the only other, the Kings and the Wolves, only teams in that category.
I will never forget that game against the Kings, and that's something I always go back to when you think about, like, man, this Wolves team is so hard to watch. I mean, this is terrible. This is unworthy of fans to even spend any time of their day to watch. It's like, it was way worse a handful of years ago. I remember exactly on that day, I was talking to my then girlfriend, now wife, about the Wolves are going to find some way to lose this game. And then De'Aaron Fox goes to the line. He intentionally misses a free throw, gets it back, and they go back and tie the game, go to overtime, and they lose. And I left before overtime was over to go play pickup basketball because I was like, I don't want to see what happens. I know they're going to lose. And she's like, how do you know? And I was like, trust me, I've watched enough Wolves games to know what's going to happen here. And of course, they went on to lose. And I remember hearing that stat. Yeah, 1 in 9,000 whatever games that it was. And so it's a little bit serendipitous. I don't want to say it is going to rewrite all the wrongs of Wolves past, but definitely feels good to be able to say, like, hey, well, it actually happened twice and we were on the winning side of one of them.
Yeah, I believe that same season they had the CP3 jersey untucked game. Yes. So that was another insane one. But I like that, and I'm kind of interested in covering this game, this Kings game that we're talking about in the offseason. But that Kings game was like the lowest point of the Cat era in many ways. Like their season was kind of over by that point anyway, but like that it's crazy to think back at that time. Like the franchise had like was going nowhere. This was this season ended early because of COVID. Like I said, the game happened January 27th, 2020, so less than 2 months later the NBA was over for the season, or at least until the bubble. They do get Ant, maybe cut part, they win the lottery because of losses like that, so maybe it all works out. But yeah, to be on the other side of it, one thing I kind of do is to go to opposing teams' subreddits and check out their. I haven't done that yet, so maybe that'll be. Although, like the first time, this is almost like the most annoying thing that fan bases do is the first time they beat the Thunder, I did it, and everyone was like, just so like they were just like, yeah, tough one. Oh well,
whatever.
Like,
yeah.
No, I
yeah.
want your tears. You're not giving it to
That's
me.
That's right.
But yeah, just to do it without Ant is kind of the craziest thing. And he did, obviously, he got the big block at the end. It's crazy how many defensive plays he has in his young career for someone that, obviously, the other end of the court is his specialty. But, like, to just do it with the young guys, I think the primary lineup was, like, Dillingham, Clark, TJ Shannon, and then Nas and Jaden, who are both playing like not their, like Nas is, especially last year, was playing mostly four, and then Jaden's played most of his career at the three. Like now they're all playing down a position, and it's just like an insane game. I'm not even sure how much to take away from it big picture, aside from like the young guys playing well, obviously that's super important, but like obviously if they lose this game by a couple points in regulation, it would have the same long-term effect in the sense of like it was a crazy game from basically start to finish, or at least once the Wolves started to come back. But the value of winning this game is just immense to me. Maybe I'm overrating a single victory, but like I'm going to kind of hammer it home on this podcast. The schedule gets incredibly easy the rest of the way. They have the easiest strength of schedule remaining in the Western Conference. And the only team in the entire NBA that has an easier strength of schedule than the Wolves is the Toronto Raptors, which is a random team. Usually the good teams have easy strength of schedules because they don't have to play themselves. So for context, so that they're tied with the Clippers in the standings. The Clippers have a combined strength of schedule for their opponents of 530. So if I look and try to find a team that's around 530, that's the Dallas Mavericks. All right. So then the Wolves combined win percentage is just under 440. So if I look for a team that fits that model, the closest team is the Portland Trailblazers. So basically, with the two teams that are tied, the Clippers are going to be playing. I already forgot what I said. What was the first team I said?
There's so many teams are all clumped up.
Yeah. So based on their strength of schedule, the Clippers are going to play the Mavericks every single game the rest of the way, and the Wolves are going to play the Blazers the rest of the games of the NBA. Like that's how like distinct their schedule advantage is over the Clippers the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's going to be huge. I mean, I think especially as we're really trying to get Randall back in and Dante back in, and we'll talk about their kind of reintroduction into the team and kind of how that's going to go or how we envision that going. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be great to be able to have that. And again, Ant has been going through some bumps and bruises. We saw Nas go down, like I mentioned earlier, go down with a little bit of an ankle injury as well, too. And I'm not saying that we need to be resting those guys, but definitely, you know, maybe not hammering home so hard of minutes on them. Hopefully they won't have to play so many clutch games, because I think that is racking up a lot of mileage on their bodies, and it's going to take a toll. I mean, we see what happens to Tibbs teams all the time in the playoffs, that, you know, they have to play so many minutes, and, you know, they're not even in clutch games. They just play so many minutes just because. And so the Wolves have kind of, by result of the game, have had to play that hard. And so, you know, the Wolves, that you talk about the Blazers, the Wolves are technically 2-2 against the Blazers this year. So luckily they are not on our schedule anymore. But in the Blazers, to their credit, they're playing better than what a lot of people anticipated. But yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you think about so much to come down to schedule, not just who they play, but what's that record going to be like for them against division opponents, against conference opponents. So that's going to be huge for us.
Yep. And just kind of things like the Wolves are going to get fortunate of when they play Philly. It's not like Philly's had a great stretch at any point really this year, but I doubt that the Wolves play Embiid in either of the two remaining games against Philly this year. It doesn't seem like, I mean, just given their spot in the standings, it kind of makes sense for them to kind of punt on the rest of this year. But like the Wolves are probably going to get lucky with a lot of that stuff. Like I always kind of say, there's a difference between like playing Utah, for instance, in November when they're trying, and when they play them like the last game of the season, when if their pick is at all in flux, they'll the tank will be on for them. But yeah, just the value of winning this game because of the crazy travel schedule. Like I covered the game last night. I didn't go to bed until 2 in the morning. The players didn't get to their hotel until 4 in the morning in Oklahoma City. It's insane. I don't understand why this was set up like this. They just played OKC before the break. Why wasn't that game in Oklahoma City so that both of these games could have been at home? Like I just, to kind of go on a tangent here, like so much has been made after the All-Star break that, and I found it just so infuriating. Like the NBA sucks now. And it's so many of the narratives are dumb. I don't even want to dig into them because we kind of already did when the All-Star game happened. But like, the one thing I do think that is very frustrating is when you get good teams like this, and the Wolves were hurt regardless of the schedule, so that was always, but like, make sure to like have the travel schedule figured out. And that's the biggest thing that I don't like about the in-season tournament is like the Wolves had a week off in the middle of the season. I mean, it'd be so much better for them if they had played a game or two during that, so they had two less back-to-backs. One thing they'll never do is shrink the schedule to like 72 or 76 and take away all the back-to-backs. But like, that's, I mean, it clearly what, like, both teams shot above 40% in the first game for three, and then both shot below 35 in the second game. Like, that's obviously not a coincidence.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, is that ever going to get fixed? And you got to imagine that's near the top of the list of demands for whether it's, you know, the front office, like execs, or whether it's even just for players themselves, the NBA Players Association, where, you know, rest is so important. There's been so much research out there that's done about rest and its correlation to injury and whatnot. So I think for their own player safety, I mean, that should be something that the commissioner has to kind of get into. I mean, they're talking about, okay, we're going to change a shot clock from a square into a circle. Like, who gives a shit about that? You know, like, can we focus on the things that actually will impact players and not just the players? But, you know, if they want the star players to play, they don't want, you know, them taking unnecessary rest days, and stop making schedule things like this where, you know, I'm surprised that, you know, the Wolves didn't voluntarily sit anyone, probably because they couldn't because of the injuries they already have. But I mean, Chet was out today because he played in a back-to-back. He's still working his way back from injuries. So that's something that the NBA wants to avoid that. I mean, they're putting this game on nationally televised television on, I think today's game was on ESPN, right? Where it's like, okay, we really want to showcase the best talent. You want to grow those smaller markets like OKC, no matter how good of a product they have, they need to be pushed by the NBA. Then, you know, allow them to be able to set up these marquee games where players are ready to play.
Yep, I agree. And to me, it's like, there's no way to avoid all back-to-backs. Obviously, like, the nature of the schedule currently, like, they have to happen. But, like, the ones like this where the games are separated by 22 and a half hours, like, that's just, that shouldn't happen. And I get, like, the first game was bumped by national TV, so, like, that's why it happened. But, like, that has to be a priority for those schedule makers, is to make sure that, like, you get at least 24 hours, and regardless of national TV. So, yeah, we can move on to our next topic here. So I've been thinking about, like, I know, like we all want this season to be last year, and it's, I think the cliche has been like, it's more similar to 2 years ago, but the more I sit here and think about it, and this was kind of spurned on by, one of Chris Hine's, newsletters, a few weeks ago, that I'm kind of finding this season, more similar to 3 years ago, the season that like the Pat Bev year that ended, against Memphis. So that year they started 16 and 20 and finished 46 and 36 and had like the best offense in the NBA the second half of the year. And I'm kind of starting to see like that path, hopefully like the playoff series isn't what happens, but like I'm starting to see like that path is like more likely compared to the first Rudy Gobert year where they just completely tanked and they barely sneak into the playoffs. So Leo Hallerfall, do you agree with me that that's an apt comparison?
I think that's a really good point. I never really thought about the schedule and the end result of their record. I think based on what you're sharing, I mean, yeah, it's hard to ignore that. I mean, the way that things are shaping up, especially with players coming back from injury, just much, you know, like they are looking to prime to bounce back and finish with a positive ending. Yeah, I think it's like that. But I would say just in terms of the actual basketball product out there, I will say foul for this. I mean, I think there are games that look like that Pat Bev year. I mean, so when you say Pat Bev year, I think about the Wolves back, Jared Vanderbilt, Malik Beasley running around, you know, just kind of fly around defense, where more recently they've looked a lot more like that. You know, they're playing their younger players, they're playing a style where you know, Jaden's their center, you know, is kind of doing his Jared Vanderbilt impression out there, collecting rebounds and, you know, making some hustle plays. I think from that sense, yeah, there are games that look like that. But for the most part, I'm talking about just purely on the basketball aspect of integrating new pieces. It's a little bit still more like 2 years away or 2 years ago for me. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point that you do bring up, though. I think it will shape up and hopefully we'll finish with a smooth ride. Hopefully, again, I think 3 years ago, that's when we got the play-in champs, right? The LA Clippers, Pat Bev on the thing. Hopefully the Wolves can avoid that this year where they don't have to be in the play-in and have to stand on the table after beating, I don't know, the Sacramento Kings or the Dallas Mavericks with AD having came back after two games at home. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just more like maybe the vibes or, I don't know, those are always going to be similar to the first Rudy year, but like, I just think this team has more ceiling than the teams 2 years ago. That team was kind of dead in the water, certainly after the Rudy punch that was kind of that kind of ended any hope probably for the rest of the season, unfortunately there. But I do think like they have, like that team had a lot of just like fun defensive schemes. Like they were playing the high wall, and obviously Rudy will come back, but certainly this version of the team reminds me of that. The missing Randall and Gobert and Naz at center and fly around defense, all that stuff. Like that certainly reminds me of this team. But I guess you're definitely right that I think the vibes, there's no way to escape, kind of the negative vibes. I'm sure I wasn't on social media during the when they were down 25, but I'm sure it was a cesspool as it always is. I know my mentions were weirdly, people don't even read, man. Like I tweeted out after the Houston game, like the quote I always tweet out, which like Finch said back in November, like it's Groundhog Day, we lose the same way every way. And people are coming like, doesn't he know like he has control of that? It's like I quoted him from November. Read the tweet. Like
right.
you want him to respond to, like no. And then I'm sitting in the post-game press conference and someone asks him like, what can you guys do better to be better late in games? The first thing he says is like, well, it can start with me. I can be better. It's like, yeah, see, he like,
right.
Nah, like the internet cesspool is obviously always there.
The internet is not a great place for reading comprehension, especially Twitter for that matter. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I will say that I don't think the Wolves will end up in the play-in like they did 2 years ago or even 3 years ago. But the Wolves are people, it should be a team that teams don't want to see. I mean, we have experience in it. We played a total of 3 play-in games in 2 years. And technically, I mean, you want to include the Nuggets game 82 I mentioned earlier in 2018. I mean, that was technically kind of a play-in game as well, too. So when it comes to the last game of the regular season, don't see the Wolves. So teams should take notice of that.
Here we go. Well, I think the Utah Jazz last game of the regular season will take a loss. I think they'll be fine with that. But yeah, next howl or foul. Shams kind of had a report before the game, the first OKC game, that it was kind of beginning to look like Randall and DiVincenzo are going to come back. The Wolves put out their own statement before they came back from the All-Star break, saying that Randall was cleared for on-court activities and DiVincenzo was working 3-on-3 or 5-on-5 or something like that. We were maybe a little bit behind Randall, but it does seem like those guys are going to come back soon. I mean, Rudy is still day-to-day with the back spasms. Obviously, him being ruled out like on the bookend games of the All-Star break and now through this, okay, like that's not a great sign. Chris Hines said he saw him in the Houston games and he was having a hard time sitting down and stuff, and then I saw him last night and didn't see that. So, but that's probably the nature of back spasms. It comes and goes. But until we hear otherwise, I don't think Rudy Gobert will be out too much longer. But that's purely a guess. But howl or foul on looking at like this game and the recent stretch of without Rudy especially, but without Dante and Randall, like, are they going to be able to continue playing like this and like the youth movement games? And are they going to continue to have performances like this or how I worded it here? It will go right back to looking like it did at the beginning of the season when these guys come back, howl or foul.
I'm going to say how, and that I think it will more than likely go back to right back to looking like how it did at the beginning of the year when the guys were back healthy. And the reason I say this is it's kind of innocent until proven guilty. And I think with the way that Julius Randle has played, I mean, I will say that there was more progress. He was pushing the ball a little bit faster. He was doing less ball holding when he had it right before he went down in that Magic game. But we have to see it. We have to see it to believe it, that can Randle adjust to playing this fast style where he's willing to get off the ball, you know, make 0.5 second decisions. And same with Rudy. Once Rudy comes back, he has to be able to, look, I'm not just going to suck up space and do nothing on the offensive or try and do too much on the offensive. And I think that's kind of sometimes his problem is that, you know, he wants to play like Nikola Jokic instead of when, okay, well, maybe your ideal is probably closer to, I don't know what a good comp is, but, you know, maybe prime Dwight Howard, where it's like, hey, like, just catch, finish your plays. You know, you don't have to always be creating plays for other people. We know that he's had some success in a short role, but we know that when he gets a little bit too much freedom, it looks a little bit bad. So, yeah, I'd like to see it before I believe it. But what about you, Ryan?
I'm going to say foul. I don't think it'll go right back. I think the rotation will probably, like, guys will start to get cut out again, unfortunately. Honestly, Dillingham might be the first guy when DiVincenzo come back, at least, might be the first guy to see his minutes kind of cut into. But I do think that, like, at least on the court and quality of play, I don't think it's going to go back to, like, the stagnant stuff from the earlier of the year, or the really, really bad starts with, like, the starters are terrible. I do think, and people won't like it, that Randall's going to start. Nas will go back to the bench. What I'm looking to see, and, like, I think this will be, like, the reintegrating these guys and continuing to play as well as they have, despite kind of losing games here. I still think they've been playing very, very well. I think the last part of the season will be defined by reintegrating these players when they get healthy, because as much fun as this team is, and we'll talk about how, like, these young players projecting forward, like, look great, and that's a huge step. But I think ultimately everyone understands and agrees that, like, the ceiling from this team is going to come from Dante, Randle, and Gobert being on the court. It's not to say that Jalen Clark won't have a role, TJ Shannon and Dillingham won't have roles down the stretch of the season. They absolutely will, and I mean, obviously, we hope everyone's healthy the rest of the way, but, I mean, the Wolves had two minor injuries in this game already. Like, they'll unfortunately be likely other injuries. But I do think that, like, I just want to see them when the matchups aren't going well for a certain player. When it's not going well, I mean, Mike didn't play very much tonight. The back-to-back probably had a lot to do with that. But, like, when Randle, or when the matchups call for Nas over Randle, do it. When Gobert doesn't have the matchup advantage, go somewhere else. Like, I don't want, like, it was even like the Houston game, like, why did they close with Mike? Like, that's kind of frustrating. And that goes to what you're saying, like, innocent until proven guilty. Like, I just do think that, like, they will try to be a little bit more pragmatic about who gets to close, who not always closing with the same unit. And at a certain point, if, like, we can't play cake guys anymore. If you're going to, I mean, we've kind of, it all season has kind of felt like they've been in between stages, like trying to win and trying to prepare for the next couple of years. And more often than not, they've chosen, like, to try to win this year. And I don't necessarily disagree, but, like, if we're going to do that, like, we got to go, like, there's no more. And they did it last year. They would sit Rudy during games. They'd sit Kat during games. They got to start doing that again. And I guess in the short term, like, let's at least get these guys on the court. Because I do think, like, Randle and DiVincenzo especially, they've really missed those guys in their scoring punch in a lot of these games.
Yeah, I agree with you on a lot of that. I think when you mentioned Mike Conley earlier, he played, you know, I think it was 14 minutes tonight. I think he is honestly going to be the one that's going to be the odd man out. Not only, again, as it relates to when Dante was starting and we were like, okay, well, Mike took it like such a pro. He was willing to sit, right? Where I think he very likely has to understand that, okay, well, his minutes are going to get cut back because if Dante's still able to play a little bit of point in there, the minutes don't necessarily have to go straight to Rob, but to Jalen Clark. I think they have to find a way to get Jalen Clark minutes. I mean, it's just, we'll talk more about him later in this episode, but Jalen Clark has really, really proven himself. And again, he's still a rookie, so it's not to say he will be, you know, this good every single night. But he's shown that there's so much value in the way that he plays. He just does so much of the little stuff. It reminds me a little bit of how Jordan McLaughlin, the way that he played, he would come up with these like little plays sometimes where it's just like, oh, these are winning plays. He's pushing pace. He's making the smart decision. He's crashing down. He's reading the defense for, you know, sneaky, you know, extra possessions. Those are the plays that the Wolves really need because they don't have a ton of those type of players. I mean, I think, you know, Dante is good at that. So maybe that's kind of a little bit redundant. But I think Mike, especially in most of my game notes from this last week of games, it's just in my column for Mike, it's just been, he's been hunted on defense by the Rockets, by the Thunder. Mm-hmm. They're going at him. And I understand that, you know, those are maybe some tough matchups. Those aren't necessarily small teams. But Mike, for as smart as he is and as much as he's willing to play with, you know, some moxie and, you know, everything that he can do, you know, just kind of the intangibles that he brings, it's just it's still a physical game. And it's just clearly passing on Mike. It's not even just getting out muscled, but he's getting out quicked out there as well, too. And I think that's really telling. You know, even Rob sometimes, you know, could make it up with his quickness by, you know, when he's pretending to you know, hold low position, he'll just kind of jump ahead and smack a ball away. Like, he could do that. Mike just kind of doesn't have that spring in his step right now. His fingers are kind of jacked up as well, too. So Mike may be the one that has to lose some minutes. It's not to say he can't play any minutes, but I think his count will probably go down the most if we want to get more Jalen Clark or even TJ Shannon minutes here.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I think, and this doesn't take away anything you said, like, I wouldn't judge him on tonight, second night of a back-to-back, and a crazy one at that, obviously, but didn't play well in the other two games. I do know his finger is not fully healthy yet, the one that he missed time with. I don't think he can dribble like he wants to, so I would assume that might be affecting his shot as well. It's kind of hard to see how that would affect his defense necessarily, but I agree with you that he's kind of getting hunted. And I do think they'll certainly, when Dante comes back, they'll certainly go back to starting Dante and having Mike come off the bench, assuming they have everyone else healthy as well. I do wonder if Mike is, but I do, to a certain extent, I do kind of think Mike fits in that category of, if the Wolves are going to hit whatever ceiling, it's going to be, Mike is going to have a role, not a starting role, maybe not even, but like, I still think they need to find Mike minutes, and he's under contract for next year. Like, they don't necessarily have a pure starting point guard next year. I think they're probably hoping that Mike is going to play a role next year too. But I do agree with you that Mike might be one of the odd people out when people get healthy. But I almost, like, I got a knock on wood with talking about people getting healthy, because they haven't yet. But we can move on to our next segment, Apex Alpha. Leo, who is your leader of the pack this week?
I know we talked about him in our last episode, but I got to keep hammering home this point right here. TJ Shannon, Terrence Shannon Jr. I mean, this guy, I mean, he played 29 minutes tonight. He scored 17 points. 11 of those 17 points came in the fourth quarter. He was just relentless. Attacking, had a double-double, 17 points, 10 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 2 blocks. Again, everything he was doing was such force. A number of his drives could have been called and ones as well, too. They're officiating the way that they were for the Thunder on both ends of the court. And I was watching the game with one of my close friends. He's a Thunder fan, but he used to work with the LA Clippers and the LA Sparks back in the day. And, you know, I would say he's someone who's very well-versed with the NBA, and he knows a lot. And, you know, he recognizes Terrence Shannon. He's like, oh, yeah, I think I know. He's your rookie, right? He's played a lot in college. He's like, yeah, he was a five-year player and everything. But I was just, like, gushing about him, because as we were watching that fourth quarter comeback, he's like, dude, this guy only has one move. That's what he says. Like, this guy has one move. It's just to hold turbo and run towards the rim and try and shoot a layup every time. And I was like, dude, that is what he plays with. He is, like, such a breath of fresh air of the way that he attacks. Like, you know, we saw, you know, Ant's capable of doing that, but Ant and both Jaden and even Randall, they kind of slow it down as it gets to the rim. They kind of slow step it. They try and draw a little bit of contact and fall away. But no, like, TJ's going through you. And just the way that he's playing, he got the NBA TV interview with the headset on after the game as well, too. Again, I just love so much about the way that he plays. And, you know, I know we did a long bit about him last week, but I just have to give him another shout out for just how great he was and how he has been. And again, I really, really, really hope that Finch continues to find minutes for him at once Randall and once Dante come back in the lineup.
Yeah, the pushing the ball aspect is, like, the biggest thing in the aggression towards the rim. I just think, like, we've been, like, the Wolves are still down at the bottom in pace. We've just been, like, it's such a low-hanging fruit thing, 25th in pace. It's just been such a low hanging. So to get anyone to do it has been awesome. And Dillingham, to a certain extent, has done it too. To see him attack the rim like that has been so fun. It's a needed part of their offense. Yeah, him and Clark have been the most impressive people. That's my Apex Alpha is Jalen Clark. Both of them, just as rookies, have been very impressive. Shannon's obviously older. Shannon was in college 5 years. He's older than a lot of the regular rotation guys, honestly. But Jalen Clark, especially in the first OKC game that he unfortunately hit his head on the court and wasn't able to come back. But he was their best option against SGA for a lot of the game. And I honestly kind of think they win that first OKC game if he's able to play the entire game, because like he was plus 20 in the minutes that he was out there, and the Wolves lost the minutes he was not out there by 27. And SGA was able to get wherever he wanted, basically, and like down the stretch of that first game, Shea was just spraying it out for open three-pointers after open three-pointers. But just like big picture thought with these rookies and Dillingham to a certain extent too, is like these are the type of players. I mean, Clark they got and Shannon they got for end of the first round and second round picks. Like these are the type of players with the new second apron that you're going to have to convert to rotation players. Obviously, like the big money guys are going to be there and going to soak up the payroll, but like these are the players you're going to have to, because you're going to lose. I mean, you're going to lose. The Wolves are not going to bring back all of Randall, Naz Reid, and Nikhil, and maybe even two might be tough. It's like they're going to lose. I mean, you've seen it with Denver. Denver has struggled to find these type of players. OKC has 1,000 of them. And I'd see it like, I mean, this is Jalen Clark has been playing for 16 games, I think. Like, to see this already from him, and then Shannon has been playing for even less. Like both of these guys have basically come onto the scene with these injuries, and they've both just been phenomenal and kind of kept the season alive. Because I was thinking about this too. How many teams? And it's not like the Wolves have been. They've basically played 500 ball since they lost Dante. How many teams would really be able to survive? Looking at the. They've been playing a bunch of good teams. How many good teams would be able to survive without three starters? Obviously, one of the starters, the Wolves haven't been missing Ant for other than the game or two. But, obviously OKC could. But, if Denver was out, what would it be? Aaron Gordon, MPJ, and Jamal Murray? Like, they would be toast. If Houston was out, three of their big guys. That happened to them. They were missing Jabari Smith and Fred VanVleet, and they went on a huge losing streak. Like, we've seen it. Like, the Mavs are missing a whole bunch of people. AD and, basically all their big guys are out. And they've lost a bunch of games. So I think that's been the most impressive part, is, just keeping the season alive, buying time through this tough schedule part and also the tough injury part.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there with Jalen Clark. I love seeing him pop up on here as well, too. I mean, for those of you who maybe didn't pay as close attention to the first OKC game on Sunday, Jalen Clark played 18 minutes. He was 6 of 7 from the field. He missed one shot. He had 14 points, 2 of 2. And something that I really like to watch when players shoot the ball is, how does the ball go through the rim when they shoot? I'm not saying that this dictates how great of a shooter you are, but I do really pay attention to the process of it and how much are they working on their shot. Because when you're really working on your shot, you're finding ways to improve it. And Jalen Clark, on his two threes that he hit the other game and also in this game today, those were damn near perfect swishes where it didn't hit the rim at all. And I'm saying that Jalen Clark's the next coming of Steph Curry or anything, but he's very clearly a guy that's working on his craft and getting better. And so I like to watch those results. And you look at the box score tonight, you have to imagine, I had to do a double take. I mean, I know I missed part of the game. I rewatched it again, but Jalen Clark played 29 minutes. He was a minus 18, which was worse on the team. That does not match. I know single game plus minus, but that does not match the eye test at all of how he was playing out there. I mean, he was 1 for 3, only had 5 points. Somehow he only had 1 steal, 0 blocks. But the way that I was watching, I don't know how many of those maybe were the deflections then, because he must have had at least 5 or 6 deflections out there the way he was playing. And even in clutch time and overtime, the way that he was defending SGA, I mean, he was doing a great job in the win that they had before the All-Star break. He was doing a great job on SGA before he went out with injury, even though SGA was still getting his, he was making it tough. And same with today in overtime, Jalen Clark made SGA, I want to say, almost looked like he blocked a shot. Either he blocked SGA's tough, he was on the left side banker that went off the side of the backboard, or he contested him so hard that he shot it off the side of the backboard. Either way, Jalen Clark was amazing in that. I think the pressure that he brings, I mean, yes, I talked about his spot-up shooting, but Jalen Clark is also someone who's not afraid to take it to the rim. I mean, he's shown surprisingly a beautiful touch on his floater. I mean, he drives in, he just kind of flips that ball up there, and it's, I don't know if he's been working with Mike Conley or whatever, but the paint scores from the rookies, especially from the young guys, have been great. I do want to make note, so in, I went through when I was rewatching that fourth quarter, I was doing a tally. So the Wolves were, again, down 24 points with about 10 minutes and 50 seconds left. They scored 39 points from there moving forward. So in the last 11 minutes, about, they scored 39 points. Of those 39 points, by my tally, 34 of those points were either in the paint or at the free throw line. So that's pretty amazing when you think about, like, they weren't just like shooting threes and draining them. The only crazy shot that took place was maybe Naz's step back three, which we've seen him hit a number of times since he's been starting, even just in his career. Yeah, crazy step back three. And he also hit a little pull up midi as well, too. Those are the only two buckets, both scored by Naz, that came outside of the paint or at the free throw line. So again, like, credit again, TJ, all 11 of his points were in the dunker spot, in transition, putbacks. Like, I mean, those are the things the Wolves really need right now, especially given the fact that they're missing their starting front court of Rudy Gobert and Julius Randle. So yeah, love to see it. Both of them, shout out, man. I mean, amazing game.
Yeah, the most impressive, I mean, I think we knew coming in that Jalen Clark would be a good defender. He won Defensive Player of the Year in the Pac-12 in college. But I think I've been impressed with his offensive game. And not, I mean, obviously scoring numbers haven't been crazy. He hasn't been doing anything insane out there. But, like, I think the rep on him, especially as a rookie, was going to be, like, it's, teams are just going to ignore him, completely ignore him. And certain teams have, to a certain extent. They, the OKC in the first game guarding him with Chet and tried to, like, do the sag off him or whatever. And they did, it didn't really work, or at least it didn't hamper the Wolves. Like, he did a good job setting screens, making cuts, not taking dumb shots. Like, that's been the biggest thing, is like, it hasn't been a complete disaster. Obviously, I don't think he's ever going to be a great offensive player, but like, if he can hit open threes and make smart plays and not overdo it, I like, that's obviously going to be a valuable player for the Wolves.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy to think, because I talked about this last time too. I did a piece about the Iowa Wolves, the Wolves G League affiliate, and you had guys like Jalen Clark who were playing pertinent roles on that team, and that was when they were basically second in the league and tied with the top seed in the G League when Jalen Clark was playing the majority of their games over there. So he's kind of, you know, he's worked at it. This wasn't just something that, oh, he's always been good, and then all of a sudden he shows up and he can be good. It's like, no, he got good by working at it. So yeah, I love that hard hat, bucket pail mentality of his.
Exactly. All right, on to our next segment here. Prey of the week. Who did the Wolves make their prey? And I'm going to go the officials, the refs. Obviously, talking about the refs is always kind of should always be a bit of a taboo subject, especially, I mean, blaming losses for them, I think, is usually not the way to go. And I'm not even, I wouldn't even blame them for the Wolves losing the first game. But obviously, and I thought the crowd in the first game was a bit overzealous with the officials. There was a couple calls that Shea got that are annoying, and Shannon drew the same contact and didn't get the call. I just thought, like, the crowd reaction and obviously Ant got another tech in the first game. I thought it was a bit much, but obviously I have a quote here from Finch after the game. Obviously they're frustrated. I mean, Ant has clearly been frustrated all game. So here's what Finch said after this Wolves win. It's so frustrating to play this team because they foul a ton. He's talking about OKC. They really do. They foul all the time. And then you can't really touch Shea. It's a very frustrating thing, and it takes a lot of mental toughness to play through it. And obviously that happened in both games. The first game, I thought they kind of let the officiating kind of dictate what they were doing. And then this game, they probably did a better job of it. But like, 17 free throws for Shea is just kind of, it's just insane. It's frustrating to watch. For me, I'm not even like complaining about the refs really, because they were probably by the book all fouls. But like, I'm just going to continue to like say foul baiting and foul grifting is just bad for the game. It sucks. It's not fun to watch, and it's annoying. And like, have some self-respect. Like, have some like just be a hooper. Like, you don't see, like, Ant just never does it. That's why he doesn't get calls. It's because he doesn't, other than yelling, hey, he doesn't flop. And so I just, like, I'm on a soapbox, but, like, the foul grifting, the foul, and like, Shea's an amazing player. It seems like he's going to win MVP, and he'll probably deserve it. or at least, I mean, you can have your Jokic versus Shea MVP debate. I don't, it is what it is. But, like, he's an amazing player, and he's very good outside of any foul grifting. But, like, it's just, it's annoying. It's annoying to watch. Obviously, the Wolves rain down oh my gosh, what were they saying? Free throw merchant.
Yeah.
So that was funny. And again, it's not a big deal. And Shea is an amazing player otherwise. But, like, basically getting praise for, like, embellishing calls, or, like, Shea has this elbow that he does to get space that I'm sure doesn't look like a foul, but I don't know if it's legal. But, yeah, what do you think about my I'll call it a lame officials rant.
No, I don't think it's lame. I think it's warranted. I don't think Finch he's not a Taylor Jenkins, right, where he's always targeting the officials like, oh, it's always their fault. They're the reason we lose. But, you know, I was talking about this again when I was watching the game with my friend who is an avid Thunder fan. And, you know, we both know that the Thunder lead the team in deflections. And so they do have a bunch of great defensive players that have active hands. So I will give them their due credit. But, yeah, absolutely. I said this while I was watching the game, where I was surprised at how did the Thunder not get called for more fouls, the amount of reaching that they do for every drive. Again, I will say, I'll give credit. So Jalen Williams has been a player that I've always been during the drafts a couple years ago. I was like, I really like that Jalen Williams guy. You know, I think he might be pretty decent, and it turned out to be great. But I never knew how good he was on defense. I never knew how long his wingspan was at 7'2" or whatever it is for his size, and the amount of picks that he gets. I remember most notably is that he ripped Julius Randle that one time in their first meeting, where it kind of went viral. Mm-hmm. Like, Julius Randle can't dribble or whatever. It's like, now Jalen Williams, like, an all-world defender. Like, he should be on an all-defensive team, I think. But yeah, aside from that, I mean, there's a ton of reaching and scratching that they do. The amount that they try and get deflections, yeah, they rightfully should be getting more foul calls. And we saw that happen in the fourth quarter, finally. You know, after a while, they started getting a little bit more foul calls in their favor for the Wolves. So, yeah, I think you have a fair point there. And it is frustrating because I think, yeah, when you talk about flopping, yeah, Ant doesn't flop, or, you know, whatever the case is. But, you know, Ant does try and sell fouls in the sense of, yeah, say, hey, ref. Like, that's his thing now. Hey, ref. But he doesn't throw his head back. He doesn't, like, do a full body convulsion when he's getting touched, like you see with the Austin Reeves or, you know, Shea or, you know, Damian Lillard, Trae Young. Like, these are guys that when you touch them, like Jalen Brunson, like, their whole body goes into, like, electroshock, like, and they all of a sudden fall down, and, you know, their heads are just like how do they not have more neck damage from the amount of, like, head throwing that they do, or making crazy faces like Devin Booker does, you know, where every time he touches, it just looks like he's getting stabbed. So, yeah, absolutely. It's quite annoying. I do feel that, I think serendipity wise, that it will work back out in our favor in the playoffs, where, you know, the refs kind of allow the players to play a little bit more. We saw that last year in the playoffs. The Wolves played through that. They played tough defense, but they also play through contact. And so I think that will play a little bit of a thing in their favor. I think that's something the Thunder do have to think about. It's like, okay, well, how much are you going to be depending on fouls here to win games? I'm not saying that they're not talented enough to not do that, but I do think that is a big part of their thing, is that, okay, we're going to win the foul battle.
Yep. All right. Who is your prey this week?
My prey of the week this time, I am going with Isaiah Hartenstein. Everyone loves iHeart. iHeart's a great player. But today in the Wolves game, I think it was in the third quarter it was, or perhaps it was the second quarter, he took an accidental headbutt from Jaden McDaniels when there was going up for, Jaden was getting trying to go for offensive rebound, and Isaiah Hartenstein was behind him, and Jaden kind of jumped backwards, unintentionally headbutted Isaiah in the face. And he looked, at first I was like, oh, okay, it doesn't look that bad, but they had to stop the game because he was bleeding so much out of his face. It looked like it was his nose, a little bit on his mouth. It was kind of pouring everywhere. And for those of you listeners who watch MMA at all, which I'm an avid MMA fan, there's a fighter in the UFC called Calvin Kattar. And he's most known for just taking a brutal beating against Max Holloway, who was like a Hall of Famer type of fighter. He just, like, beat up his face really bad in a fight, just kept taking him. And I realized at that moment when I saw Isaiah Hartenstein's face looking all bloodied up, he looked exactly like Calvin Kattar after he got beat up by Max Holloway. And I was like, oh, that actually looks pretty similar. So, yeah, poor Isaiah Hartenstein took an inadvertent headbutt there. But, yeah, you know, he'll be fine. He survived after he had to stop the game again to clean up more blood that they found on the court later on.
Yeah, that one looked nasty. They had to, like, stop the game multiple times to keep cleaning up blood. That was a bit gross. But lastly here, what I got down here is just kind of look at the standings. Like to do this from time to time. The first thing, Detroit Pistons. Let's go. Detroit won again.
Our Detroit Pistons, the Minnesota Detroit Pistons.
I mean, it's hard to see how this Detroit pick is not going to convey. They have now won 7 in a row. Damn. 7 in a row for the Detroit Pistons. They are
3.5
clear of the Orlando Magic for the 7 seed. And even if, I mean, I don't think Orlando is going to pass them, but like, and they're only a game back of Milwaukee for the 4 seed. I mean, I would guess that they get the 6 seed and the Knicks probably stomp them out pretty easily, I would guess. But that'll be huge if the Wolves are able to get that pick this year. It really does look like, I'd be surprised if even if they dropped out into the play-in, like Atlanta, Miami, Chicago don't inspire, aren't inspirational teams that seem like, I just think Detroit's better than those teams. So that'll be big. If the Kevin Durant thing is going to be a storyline in the offseason, you'd imagine that Detroit pick would be something Phoenix would want. A mid-first round pick would be the only draft capital besides seconds that the Wolves could really offer them. But yeah, did you have any Detroit Pistons thoughts?
Oh man, do I have capital T thoughts on the Detroit Pistons? I've actually watched a good amount of their games this year, not just for rooting for them for the Wolves, you know, their future pick that they own of theirs, but also I have a couple players I play fantasy that I have on the Pistons as well too. I'm watching Malik Beasley refuse to get traded because he declined trades because he wants to play for the Pistons is pretty wild. They've weirdly added Dennis Schroeder as well too, as a weird, that's where he ended up after all this time. I feel like Dennis Schroeder has been on 10 different teams this year and he fell on the Pistons and he's contributing for them. And they're just playing a fun style of basketball. I mean, everyone has a role. They know their role. It's a fun way to watch. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we were bemoaning the Wolves losing on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve. It was a couple years ago in Detroit. New Year's Eve, where it was like, oh, this is the worst Wolves loss. And, you know, God knows how long.
That was so bad.
And then, yeah. And even 2 years ago as well, too. I mean, I think it was that year they lost a couple of times to the Pistons. And it was like, oh, man, even last year, they were kind of the butt of so many jokes. They were about to be the losingest team of all time in NBA history in a single season. And they really turned it around. So shout out to JB Bickerstaff. Shout out to Cade Cunningham. He has an amazing two-man game that he's played with Jalen Duren. Jaden Ivey, hopefully will be returning to the court in the next couple weeks as well, too. He suffered a brutal leg fracture. And Asar Thompson's playing really well as well, too. He's starting to get a static role there as a starter with them. So yeah, there's just so many fun things to like about I'm really proud of the Pistons. It feels like they're kind of like our proud stepchild there, where it's like, oh, you know what? You guys, you know, we're happy for you. We're happy for you, even if we didn't have your pick.
Yeah, I was just kind of looking into thinking about even like aside from the, they have the longest playoff drought, at least like winning a game wise in the NBA right now. They haven't won a playoff game since 2008. And at the time of that, they had made it to the Eastern Conference Finals 6 times in a row. Flip Saunders was the coach for a few of those teams. But like, they've only made the playoffs twice since then, and they got swept out by LeBron in 2016 and Giannis in 2019. Like, that's near Wolves' level of dysfunction.
Yeah, I have some family members out in Detroit, or extended family from my wife's side, and they weirdly are like somewhat in tune with the Pistons, which again is just kind of weird to me because I've never met in person. Actually, I do know one person who's also from Detroit, separate from this, who is a Pistons fan. But every time they win a big game, I'm like texting. I'm like, "Yo, you're Pistons, man!" Like, you know, I don't think it's a mirage. I think they might be for real this year. I think they really got some potential, and it's clearly not just like a 1 year bust type situation. Like for example, as you like to say, my Sacramento Kings are doing, where they're like just lumping DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. All right, let's try and make a push this year. It's like, no, the Pistons actually have a really cool young core that they're building over there. So it's really fun to watch that organically grow.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we can talk about your Kings here. Kind of looking at the Western Conference standings. Here's what I kind of have laid out in my head. So the Wolves are currently tied with the Clippers for the 6th seed. Clippers have played 2 fewer games, so they kind of have the win percentage advantage momentarily here. And then the Wolves are half game above the Mavericks at 8 seed, a game above Golden State at 9, and then 2 games above Sacramento at the 10 seed. And then Phoenix is just kind of, they're 4 ahead of Phoenix, who's not even in the play-in right now. So in my head, I'm writing off Phoenix. San Antonio, unfortunately, lost Wemby, so that's kind of going to be the end of their season. Honestly, I'm not sure that's even the worst thing for them. I mean, obviously, you want Wemby to be healthy, and he's got blood clots are scary, but like from a losing game standpoint, I don't think that's even the worst thing for them. I'm kind of writing off Phoenix. I don't think they're going to make a run here, to be honest. Their schedule is impossible. Same thing with Sacramento. They're a solid enough team. They'll be in the play-in tournament. Maybe they can sneak into the playoffs for the right to get throttled by OKC. But the four teams that, or the three teams the Wolves should be concerned with, and I the Lakers and Rockets are 4-5. The Wolves are 4-back. Certainly possible they could catch those teams. But for making it out of the play-in, the Wolves got to stay above the Clippers, Mavs, and Warriors. And I kind of think the Warriors might be the team that be the team to watch out for. Jimmy's played well for them to start out. They're the one team of that group. The Wolves have the tiebreaker over the Clippers and Mavs, but not the Warriors. And the Warriors are the only team without an insane schedule. Clippers and Mavs have a crazy hard schedule. So yeah, what do you think? I'm fairly confident the Wolves are going to be in the top six seed for their own schedule. But what do you think? Do you think it's going to be closer than I do?
Yeah, I agree with you in that the Warriors are the team. I mean, they're kind of the hot team that everyone's kind of looking at in terms of like, oh, wow, they'd be looking really good. And they added a potential, I don't want us to call him a Hall of Famer, but, you know, someone that's playoff proven that got added to their team over there. And so you will never see what happens. But we're still talking about a very over the hill Draymond Green, Jimmy Butler, and Steph Curry. Again, it's not to say that they can't win any games, but their supporting cast is really doesn't inspire much hope. I mean, they're starting Brandon Pajinski. They're starting Moses Moody as well right now. I mean, is that a team that can match up size-wise? Again, they're playing pretty well right now, but we all know how much of a bump you can get as soon as you add a new player to the team where, you know, they'll look good in the beginning and then they'll start to kind of level out. So, but that's how I'll give them their due credit. I think they are playing stronger. Their division record is really going to hold them back because that's the first tiebreaker after the head-to-head. So it's record, and then it's their head-to-head, and it's division record. The Warriors are 2-10. That is, I believe, the worst record in the Western Conference division-wise. So if they're not winning that head-to-head matchup, then they're going to be pretty down there in terms of tiebreakers. And it looks like it really will come down to tiebreakers. So I think that's something that's working against their favor. Additionally, I do think that I have to say a team that might drop down is the Houston Rockets. I think they are a team that they're very in danger of dropping down. Again, right now, they're still four games ahead of the Wolves. That's a lot. But they've lost 7 of their last 10. Everyone talks about Fred VanVleet coming back and saving them as like, oh, they've been playing without Fred VanVleet. If you watch many Rockets games at all, he has made some clutch shots, but at the same time, he is really hurting on the defensive end. He is not the defender that a lot of people think he is. He's undersized. He gives up a lot of speed as well, too, and I think that he does not solve their issues. If anything, he might hurt them a little bit more, having to bump one of their more productive players out of the lineup, whether it's Amen Thompson or whoever it is out of the lineup that once Fred is back. I don't know what the lineup's going to be there, but I think the Rockets are very much in threat of falling down into potentially the 7 or 8 seed as well, too, just the way that things are trending. So I think the Wolves will catch the Clippers. I think the Rockets are also in play. The Lakers, again, I hate to say it, but I don't think the Wolves will be catching them. They are a very flawed roster. I don't think the Lakers are for sure contenders, but just the way that they're playing, I mean, they still have a Luka.
They have LeBron James and Luka Doncic.
Exactly, right? Yeah, so I mean, at the end of the day,
and a four-game lead.
Exactly. So I don't think that the Wolves maybe will catch them per se. It might make it interesting, but again, a lot of things have to break right for them to be able to achieve that. So yeah, I think it's the Rockets, Clippers might drop down. Warriors might rise up a little bit, but yeah, I do not have any faith in the Mavs or unfortunately for my Kings. They are, I think, 3-3 or 4-4 since Zach LaVine have joined their team. But morale is very, very low on that team. And it's one of those teams that I would say their fan base is very much in turmoil in terms of ownership. We don't have to revisit the Wolves ownership thing, but all I can say is that the Wolves know what it's like to have an owner that's kind of held them back for a long time. The Kings are starting to really come to terms with that, that Vivek Ranadive is holding them back, and they are at a point where they're not really contending, nor are they really tanking. And that's kind of where they've been for the last 10, 15 years here. They kind of blew up a lot of their younger core to kind of age up for this unrealistic run that they're going to have. So poor Sacramento Kings, you know, we'll pour one out for them. I think they will just back their way into the 10th seed anyways because of how terrible the Suns are looking and the Spurs being injured right now. But yeah, you know, who knows, man? The Kings are probably, I think there's only two other teams that are probably in a worse situation than them, and that would be the Phoenix Suns and the Philadelphia 76ers. Those are the two teams I think no one wants to be right now. But yeah, That's my thoughts on the standings.
I don't have Philly that low. They still have Embiid, and I understand that the health stuff is really scary with Embiid. I'm just saying, like, I'd rather be Philly than Washington. I'd rather be Philly than Charlotte.
The lottery
ticket that is Embiid's health is worth more than, like, say, having LaMelo Ball or whatever other assets they have to meet.
But the contract of having Joel Embiid potentially missing maybe a full, you know, the rest of the season and a lot of next season as well, too. I'm not saying he's definitely not the worst contract in the NBA, but it's going to be sitting as one of those albatrosses. He's not going to get healthier moving forward. And I think that's something I have to revisit. They just gave Paul George a fresh contract as well, too. And he's super banged up. And so, I mean, those are two heavy, heavy contracts. I mean, I think the light in the tunnel is that they have Tyrese Maxey and they still have Jared McCain, who obviously is out for the season. But those are two young, bright, you know, backcourt players. Again, maybe not superstars, but, you know, good players for sure. But yeah, we'll just see, man. I mean, I think it's the vibes for sure are really, really bad in Philly. The vibes are bad in Philly. The vibes are really bad in Phoenix right now. With Washington and, you know, your teams like the Hornets or the Jazz, they kind of know what they are. You know, they kind of know what it is. And, you know, hopefully they'll get Cooper Flagg. But yeah.
Yeah, we just need Atlanta to not win the lottery for Flagg. That's because that then the pick goes to San Antonio. But yeah, let's move on to kind of go back to Wolvesland. Our two words to round out the episode. My two words are getting healthy. Like we kind of talked about, Randall and DiVincenzo seem like they're close to getting back. And like I pointed out earlier, I do think that the rest of the season will be determined with how they reintegrate these guys back into the lineup, because ultimately the ceiling of this team, or if they do make a Western Conference playoff run, which I don't think is even, I mean, they just beat Oklahoma City with like half the roster injured. There isn't a team, I mean, obviously they'd be giant underdogs against OKC, but like there isn't a team that in the West that is like terrifying in a single series. So yeah, they really need to try to get these guys back, because that's where the ceiling of this team lies. How about you, Leo, your two words?
My two words are hold on. One for health reasons, of course, but I would also say just hold on. We talked about this earlier. The schedule. If you told me that the Wolves lost against the Rockets and against both games against the Thunder and a game against the Lakers, I mean, I wouldn't be mad. I wouldn't be like super upset about it. It's like, hey, those are teams that are above us in the standings by a significant margin. And if we lost them, that shouldn't be the end of the world. The fact that they've been able to steal one so far, if they can even steal another in LA on Thursday, which hopefully I'll be attending, that would be huge for us. That'd be really, really big, because I think after that, you talked about that cake schedule they have. I think as long as they can hold on and get through this, I'm talking about this not just even for the team, the record, but for the fans. You know, it's so easy to look at, oh, well, the Wolves have lost, you know, two of their last three now, and they really should have beat the Rockets. They could have beat the Thunder. It's like, no. Like, just hold on, because things are going to get better. And I think, you know, let's not overreact to this really tough part that we knew was coming in the schedule right now. So just hold on.
Yep. Well, they got one game left in Los Angeles, like you said, on Thursday. And then they finally kind of see the end of the tunnel. The games don't stop coming, because they got another back-to-back again. But yeah, should be interesting to see if they can start beating up on the bad teams on their schedule, because they haven't really done much of that this year. But yeah, that's where we're going to wrap it up. For Leo, I'm Ryan. Thank you everyone for listening.
Thanks everyone. Get home, drive safe.
Go Wolves.
Ayoo!